Blog Talk Radio.
I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone enough. By Rainer Maria Rilke. Translated by Anne-Marie S. Kidder. I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone enough to truly consecrate the hour. I am much too small in this world, yet not small enough to be to you just object and thing, dark and smart. I want my free will, and I want it accompanying the path which leads to action, and wants during times that beg questions where something is up, to be among those in the know, or else be alone. I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection, never be blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection. I want to unfold, nowhere I wish to stay crooked, bent, for there I would be dishonest, untrue. I want my conscience to be true before you. I want to describe myself like a picture I observed for a long time, one close up, like a new word I learned and embraced, like the everyday jug, like my mother's face, like a ship that carried me along through the deadliest storm.
Welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art, and I am your host, Richard Weissman, and I got a feeling we've got Neutron Bomb, my co-host, on hold. Let me try and bring her on.
Hey there, Richard. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Neutron?
Yeah, pretty good. So good. Far, the dog has stopped her maniacal rage at the neighbors. I spoke too soon.
Well, yeah. We can't hear it, so.
Excellent.
So, 2 weeks since we last spoke, we look like we're pretty quiet on the air here. I don't have anyone else on hold. But, I found that clip on YouTube, and it was actually prompt 3. I am much too alone in this world. And I kind of thought it was a nice way of setting the tone for the evening. I love the Chopin in the background. I thought that was a really nice bit of complimentary music, good tone for the poem. And what do you think of it?
I thought it was a great way to start off the show. Funnily enough, when I was going through the prompts, my muse has been a bit of a bitch of late. So I thought, I know I've done a lot of poems around the theme of being trapped, but this one I found to be quite nuanced. I'll draw from the lines directly. I want my free will and want it accompanying the path which leads to action, and want during times that beg questions where something is up to be among those in the know or else be alone. And it almost speaks to, yes, you have free will, but what are you going to do about it? What is your call to action? And I think as you go further down, it begs the question, how much are you willing to compromise in the face of that action? And I think it was written a while ago, it rings true still to this day.
Yeah, well, you know, my opinion has always been that real art, by definition, speaks of a truth which transcends time and place. And that's why, you know, Homer's Odyssey still kind of works for us today. That's why Shakespeare's Hamlet kind of works. And obviously, Rainer Maria Rilke, now you're talking about 20th century, not that long ago, 100 years ago, he died. So yeah, I think there's a lot of truths that speak to us, especially as modern, you know, living in this modern world with all of its complexities, and where does the individual fit in to the modern world? And, you know, Rilke, as a German poet, I can't help but think that he was influenced by the German expressionist movement of the post-war era of, you know, 1918 until his death. So if you think about like Fritz Lang in Metropolis, where you've got this individual that's trying to survive in the world of the machine and of the city and the metropolis, you can kind of feel that happening in this poem, especially, I think, but also in The Panther, which was our prompt number one. So,
excellent comment.
Yeah.
I would be lost without your literature review at times, but I am very appreciative for it.
Yeah, you know, it's that old historian / academic teacher in me at heart, you know. It never really went away. Somehow or another it's gonna come out, whether it's on this show or something else, or you know, in the written reviews of the poems that we get. It's coming out. Okay, so, and it still looks like it's just the two of us, so I guess we can start hitting it if you feel like it.
Yeah, sure. Now, I've got Peter Solway's poem up.
Yeah.
Did you want me to give it a read, or, yeah?
Sure, do it.
All right, let's, this is a fellow Aussie from what I understand. So.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can do it some justice. All right, so this is Rilke, the professor said. Condemned to always correct, red pen wrong, translate to the German, Rilke, almost vulgar, singing correction song, reggae of academia, spitting like Adolf Hitler after morning caffeine, froth of aged moustache. That poet of the caged panther back and forth in academia's prison, syllabus to explain, young female pupils, attraction to learned old men, berating senior learner, pathetic scholar schooled in Australian vernacular like Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, not Rilke, my geriatric friend, Rilke. Sophomores impressed, willing to do gymnastics forever young tour with Bob Dylan. Anything for the fatherland, old wombat's blind sacrifice. Correction, repeating, Rilke. Down under pensioner, periscope up to sight graves of failures before. Made his day in room of lecture, drove back home. Dinner delivered with childless wife, career-centered. Rilke. Age to hold such pendants, pussies to purr, honeymoon of cyanide, each night the bars getting closer, black cat defeated. Alone with doom, Rilke, he grumbles at ceiling plaster cracking, no Sistine, papal orgasms, Cromwell moving in, Rilke, Rilke. Black panthers to turn mean, invest in ammunition, heroin. Toss, read her note all again, so much in love, forgetful of who I am. Life without correction, was it, Socrates said, not worth living. A young woman with cigarette burns, tattoo of Martin Luther King, but Rilke, by noon, aged fools, all wrong, fit Jews, the chosen ones. Going to lecture next morning with gun, Rilke shouts, fuck Kafka, Mercedes-Benz, taking them all out, end poem.
What a great poem. So this kind of hits me on all cylinders. Funny, right? First of all, so first things first. I'm a big lover of comedy, and it's a damn funny poem, any way you slice it. And beyond that, it brings to the forefront the whole, you know, is it good to correct someone? Is it impolite? Do we strive for perfection? Blah, 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 the whole thing. And it reminds me, because I was first turned on to Rilke's poetry by a friend of mine who's a painter, and still to this day, it's like, you know, he's a fellow artist. I'm writing, and he's, you know, making art, paintings. And we've been friends since we were like 13. So it's a special relationship. And he introduced me to Rilke's poetry. And of course, he found the poetry in a book. And I guess he probably guessed at the pronunciation. So he introduced me to him as Rilke, which if you've never heard, right? If you've never heard the name,
I would have said that.
Yeah, Rilke. And so for years, I said Rilke until finally someone corrected me. And it reminds me of what someone once said, which is to never make fun of someone who mispronounced a name, because it means that they learned it by reading a book. So that's the first thing that this whole poem reminded me of. I thought it was just a great stream of consciousness poem that pokes good fun at my old friends in academia with their relentless obsession for correction, which always borders on shaming. And it's chock full of literary allusions. You know, Kafka's in there, double entendres, very funny wordplay. I especially liked no Sistine papal orgasms, Cromwell moving in, real car, real key, Panther, Black Panthers to turn mean, invest in ammunition, heroin. Just a great stream of consciousness piece by Peter. And it's going to be one hell of a contest to judge, because there's a tremendous amount of quality work here in the contest, and a wonderful way to start us out by getting us to pronounce the poet's name correctly. And what'd you think of it there, Neutron?
Look, I have to say, I've got a similar story, but mine's even worse. When I was younger, and of course in my first corporate job, we were having a canapé party, but nobody had ever actually corrected me on how to say canapé. So I'd been calling them canapes for the first 28 years of my life. So I was never so happy to hear this poem come up first when you suggested it, because I would have been calling him Rilke the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're on to canopies, right? So
yeah,
it always
reminds me of
The Godfather, where one of the capos is like, this guy comes up to me, hands me a Ritz cracker, the chopped liver, says canopies.
So I have to agree with you. The humor in this write was fantastic, and I think when you read it aloud, you really capture the wordplay as well. And I think I was drawn to this section here. Rilke, age to hold such pendants, pussies to purr, honeymoon of cyanide, each night the bar's getting closer, black cat defeated. And I think on second read, I really love that line, honeymoon of cyanide. I've never poisoned anyone, but I have watched my fair share of crime shows, and there is a honeymoon period before the cyanide starts to take effect. And I just thought that was such a clever way of capturing that need, that not necessarily need to be trapped, but being trapped with the black cat defeated. And then you move on to Alone with Doom. Rilke, he grumbles at ceiling plaster cracking. There's almost a resignation in these lines, the same as Rilke's Panther. And don't get me started about those damn red ink pens from academia messing up my perfectly curated assignments. At least in my mind, they were great, you know? So I thought it was a very clever riot.
Yeah, you know, and that is an ongoing debate in my head. And one of the things that has been kind of this love-hate thing on all poetry is like, do you go into this world of critical analysis and taking apart poems and the red ink and the misspellings, or do you just say, hey, this is a creative space? Think of it as kind of like a spiritual space. And if something gets mispronounced when someone's in prayer, you don't interrupt it. It's sacred, you know? And I know that our fearless leader, Kevin, is very big on correction and criticism. But as I've grown a little bit older and hopefully a little bit wiser, I've kind of come to that second viewpoint that, yeah, I could be an academic and just tear things apart, but there's, especially since poetry is more of an art form, there's something really special about just enjoying the sacredness of the art as a pure creative form. And so I think it's an interesting and valid debate that I think goes on, I'm assuming, in most poets, on all poetries, in most of our heads when we're reading these poems day after day, certainly in my head.
Yes.
And I've come to that second point of view, I think. All right, let me just make sure. Yep, still just the two of us chickens here. So I guess we're ready for the. I guess we're ready for the next one.
All right. So I'll get you to read the next one by Jack Blue when you're ready.
Yeah, I can't. Okay. So I might be mispronouncing the title, but I'm going to give it my best shot. Talking about mispronunciation and Rilke as opposed to Rilke. An owl's Pavane, number one, by Jack Blue, goes like this. The purple twilight lingering around this transient theater sweetly tells me to forget every mighty picture scroll of the Olympian holiness, or let the bubbles fade away. Almost all alone I wander in the sorry blue mirage, but still remember hovering on the broken ancient marble of majestic sapphire, like an only queen of space. Athena, tell me how your love survives all judgment above, and why the blue contingency your Parnassus brings for free defies the universal answer when you play a lonely dancer. Let all fallen angels tower now on that Olympian flower, and I'll stay around her bloom if the deadliest shade of doom surrounds our sorry theater, or we fade to sapphire. End of poem. And that was inspired by prompt three, which is the poem we opened the show with, I am much too alone in this world, yet not alone. And What did you think of it, Neutra?
I thought it was a very contemplative, nuanced ride, and I was drawn to this section here, "Let all fallen angels tower now on that Olympian flower, and I'll stay around her bloom. If the deadly shade of doom surrounds our sorry theatre, or we fade to sapphire." It kind of mimics the gentle, deep nature of the prompt by Rilke. I really enjoyed it and wish my knowledge of Greek mythology was better. I think it would have expanded on my comment as to its multi-layered content. Just on a bit of a segue, Jack Blue gives the best comments back. I'm just going to read this. He said, "The poem of Rilke was like a universe spreading through a little window, and I simply let my owl imagine the starry canvas where Mary's face looked like Athena's for a moment to him. Yes, I believe mimesis or mirroring of images might be a creative method. It would be a great pleasure to search the spiritual amethyst for the nuances of romantic sapphire." And he
wow,
does this
yeah,
with every
great.
Poem. He writes me back like this amazing message.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. Yeah, absolutely. And I, too, really love this poem. Layered, full of literary allusions, bittersweet in its reflections on art and on life itself. And, you know, reading it aloud the second time on the air, the lyricism, the rhymes, the musicality were really driven home to me as the reader. It's one of the beautiful things about late night poets is that because we're actually performing the work, it kind of steps up our game and we can really enjoy the spoken word art form that these poems are. And yeah, let's see what he said to me. He said, "Rilke's simple, noble voice is so sweet, so deep, and so strong that it's audible only to our sharpest mental ears when they're ready for the feeble breeze storming our spiritual forest," which was a great response to my comment. And yeah.
And almost poetic
okay.
in itself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't do that when people respond to my poems. Sometimes I'm inspired to say something, but it's usually not poetic.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm going to turn it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so I'll give this one a read. It's by Shelley A.B., and it's called "I Am." I am not my thoughts. I am not my mind. I am the silence that can be hard to find. I am not my memories. I am not my fears. I am each moment when now appears. I am not the reality built with stone lies. I am the reflection you see in my eyes. I am not the rain broken souls weep. I am the ocean rocking them to sleep. I am not names giving meaning or divide. I am everything now, has been, and died. I am unconditional love, eternally will be. I am here, I am now, I am eternally free. End poem.
Beautiful poem. Now, interestingly enough, this was from 10 months ago, and Shelley A.B. doesn't even say which prompt this is to, but it is definitely prompt 2, which is Buddha in Glory, which is one of my favorite Rilke poems, and actually was the poem that got me into Rilke. And it's Buddha in Glory, and you can just hear the "I am" in the poem. Buddha in Glory, center of all centers, core of cores, almond self-enclosed and growing sweet, all this universe to the furthest stars, all beyond them is your flesh, your fruit. Now you feel how nothing clings to you. Your vast shell reaches into endless space, and there the rich, thick fluids rise and flow, illuminated in your infinite peace. a billion stars go spinning through the night, blazing high above your head. But in you is the presence that will be, and all the stars are dead. The interesting thing is that the words I am, it kind of sounds like it would be prompt three, but if you think about the content of the poem, it to me kind of screams Buddha in glory. And that's why I said in my comments, amazing that this was written prior to the contest, as it is a perfect match for Rilke's Buddha in glory. Beyond that, the poem is an affirmation of spirituality, of spirit in the material world. And your thoughts, what'd you think of it?
You know what? Firstly, I say the gentle rhyme and the repetition created an identity rich in metaphor and in such a brief piece. I was drawn to, I am not the rain broken souls weep. I am the ocean rocking them to sleep. I am not names giving meaning or divide. I am everything now, has been and died. And it almost captures that notion that we are the sum of our experiences, but also the cyclical nature of life, in that we are born of and return to dust. And after you've read that, the Buddha poem by Rilke, I think I've captured the essence of both poems. I think you're right. It has to be that prompt. Like just looking at my comment after listening to the poem you just read, they just match thematically quite well. And it is a surprise that it was written 10 months ago. It's very rare that when you open your show up to pre-writes that you get stuff that is so well written to a prompt. Usually it's tangential in nature at best. Not that we don't enjoy the pre-writes. It's just sometimes they're very tangential, but this one fits perfectly. And it's almost got a mindfulness and a mantra feel to it. Like you could wake up and read this and be ready for the world every day. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that I was looking forward to in doing a Rilke show, is that we would really get some kind of spiritual recharge of our batteries, because I can't think of a more spiritual poet. You know, maybe Cahil Gibran. It's tough. It's tough to think of someone who is more just living in that spirit world and connecting us to what it means to be a spiritual seeker on this planet. So yeah, it's always just a breath of fresh air to read his poetry. Okay, and with that, I guess we'll turn it back to the next piece.
Okay, so the next one is by Mark Luffy, and I think there's a SoundCloud.
I think there is. Let me take a look. Yep, here it goes.
None of the prophecies came to pass. The dragon was a drunken fraud with smoky breath and flabby bod. When we battled, he seemed ill, keeled over, snoring on his ass. I didn't have the heart to kill, though I was tempted when I found his cavern gold had long been pawned. The shiny piles heaped there were brass. My companions, elves and dwarves, squabbled constantly over stupid things. Who blew the biggest floating rings from elaborate hookahs? Whose bright scars and shifting violet magic cloaks conferred the most invisibility, mostly used for stupid jokes? Even worse, the princess that I freed couldn't love, eyes blank with terror. Too many years trapped in a mirror, a demon's victim. She burned with need. Her heart was filled with blood and glass. I left her in the dragon's care and wandered off apart, alone, to a nearby tavern, where you fed me ale and a soup bone instead of the usual public swill. You were friendly, sensible. We talked for hours, and then next day we left, continuing a new way.
All right. Well, thank you for the SoundCloud, Mark Luby. A great piece. I thought it was a compelling storytelling poem alluding to myths of the medieval Western canon, to princesses, dragons, elves, and dwarves, and yet wrapped in lighthearted fun poking that is usually absent from that genre. And just a brilliant addition to the night. On topic and you know, simultaneously giving us a slightly different flavor than the traditional Rilke-inspired poetry. So, beautiful piece. And what'd you think of it, Neutron?
I've been chatting with Mark in the background on AP, and he advised that fantasy is where I live, and that's why I like Rilke. He always tries way harder than I do to fight his way out of fantasy. Not that I try, other than that, a great comment. So I suppose my comment here is that his fantasy writing melds very well with his storytelling. And there's almost an anticlimax to this rite in that it mimics quite the opposite of what we are taught using fairy tales. Sometimes there is no happily ever after, and sometimes you just have to fight to live another day, whether it be entrenched in the schemes of the past or just trying to survive to the next challenge. Survive rather than thrive, I suppose. I particularly like the section here, even worse, the princess that I freed couldn't love, eyes blank with terror, too many years trapped in a mirror, a demon's victim. She burned with need. Her heart was filled with blood and glass. It was a dark rite. However, listening to Mark's SoundCloud, he definitely had that tongue-in-cheek vibe. So I thought it was a really great offering for tonight.
Absolutely, yeah. And you picked out the stanza that I like best, too. You know, the mirror, mirror on the wall is there. And yet, the too many years trapped in a mirror, a demon's victim, burned with need, and her heart filled with blood and glass, that it actually, the glass of the mirror is, you know, in her heart, just poisoning her. Just amazing. And, yeah, it's just an amazing right. He's just so talented. Very well done. Okay, and I guess, let me just check. Yeah, it's still just us. I guess let's move on to our next one.
Certainly. Honestly, we have some callers soon, so we can stop listening to ourselves talk. But I'm so happy to talk to us too. But I think we've got enough poetry at least tonight.
We do. And the other thing is, that when it's just the two of us, it kind of shifts things around and it becomes a little more like a conversation, like we're doing a talk show or radio talk show discussing this art, this poetry. So it has a kind of different feel to it, a little bit more like...
Yeah, it's more intimate.
Like a talk radio show where, hey, let's look at these poems, analyze them, have fun with them. So it's kind of cool. It's interesting. I like both. I like it when it's a big party too. When we do those Christmas shows and there's like 9 callers on the line, Those are a blast too. But it's kind of nice to have an intimate night. So.
It is indeed. Now, I might get you to read the next one by S. Sharp, The End of Time.
Okay, yeah. So this is S. Sharp, and it was based on prompt one, which I want to say is the panther, right? Prompt one?
That's correct, yeah.
Yep, is the panther. Yeah. So it's The End of Time by S. Sharp, and it goes like this. Moments pulsate, picture show, your hand in mine. A beach, crystalline, white sand, an hourglass empties itself. I look back, pristine sand, two sets of prints, nothing else. Clouds infringe upon sunlight, sunset, pokes at the impending darkness. Purple, orange, red, and pink dance together, a dance floor. Wooden waxed plank floor, I spin you. The disco lights, like the sunlit clouds, flash off your elegant white dress. You become the color wheel. You spin and spin, turning into a whisper I cannot hear over the roar of sound developing. Colored smoke drawn into my pupils. Dark black holes in space, quasars, take in the last vision of you. You travel my veins, pulsating, beating in time, plunging, entering my pounding chest, a supernova. Then you are gone, an empty hourglass, dark skies, the end of time, in poem. Wow. Neutron, I am going to actually bring someone on. So we've got someone in the waiting room. I thought I did that right. Let's try it again. Here we go. 715, you're on the air.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Neutron. It's Pam. How's it going?
Hey, Pam.
Yeah, good to hear you both.
You too. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for joining us for our evening of Rilke. Yeah, it's been a quiet board, but I mean, we've been having a lot of fun. The thing is, I think after all this time and all these shows that Neutrona and I have done together, we like each other and we're pretty comfortable. So if it's just
the two
of us, it's not, not the end of the world.
Get that. I know because Rex and I have done shows just the two of us. You know, me and Gene have. We've all had our moments where it's just to, and it works, but at the same time, I figure, you know, it's always nice to have a third person or fourth or, you know, whatever works.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially you. I mean, you know, so I'm not going to speak for Neutron, but I feel like you're one of my poetry buddies, so. So having you on the air talking poems.
Agreed.
Okay, so now that you're officially on the air with us, I don't know if you had a chance to read Scott's poem or hear me recite it on the air.
I just got the last couple of lines. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay, so Neutron, what'd you think of this piece?
I thought the whimsical nature of love was sucked into an almost apocalyptic void, and it was a really interesting take on the prompt. It feels as if the protagonist loses themselves in impending darkness as purple, orange, red, and pink dance together. On second read, I have to commend the way that Scott has used science and physics to actually demonstrate this apocalyptic void and it being sucked in. And I think he's choreographed a multi-layered right here. There is a sense of loss of oneself or even codependence as the poem progresses until one reaches a climactic event and ultimately is left in darkness. a psychologically bountiful and dark ride, and I thought it was a great offering for tonight's show.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah. Yeah, you know, the end of time, so we know that that we are dealing with a layered rite, end of time indeed. It works as a love poem, as well as an existential philosophical piece where you is ambiguous. And that's one of the things I love about the Song of Solomon in the Bible, is that, you know, there's this ambiguous you, which could be a human lover, but it could also be divinity. Yeah, just an excellent piece. And yeah, it has that apocalyptic tone, you know, where it's the end of time, the sands are running out of the hourglass, dark skies. It's very, very trippy poetry. And reading it aloud on the air also kind of made it kind of come to life for me. So it's a magical thing that happens here every other Thursday on Late Night Poets. So, with that, I guess I'm turning it back to you, right, Neutron?
Yeah, so I thought, I'm not sure how many poems were, like, especially with the timing, last fortnight caught us by surprise. So I thought I'll put one on early just in case I need to drop another poem if we are short on poems at the end. So this is one I wrote 2 years ago, and it's called Female Age 29. Hospital walls whitewashed, stained from the tar of cigarette smoke of old, sanitized white robes and white cotton blankets with muted, worn blue lettering, a hospital tag on my wrist reading female, age 29. Stamen yellow pills, white horse pills and pretty pink wafers culminated in a retching of puke and bile like ill-timed balls from a laughing clown, my survival you revile. Restricted and surveilled, have you brushed your teeth? The pregnant nurse Ratchet inquired. Searching for the exit in secure ward under lock and swipe card. Could be a connoisseur of verbiage and still have shoelaces and nail clippers. I'm tripping balls with a troop of circus folk setting up the big tent inside my head. You left me for dead. End poem. And that was written to the Panther prompt number one.
Wow. Bravo, Neutron. So, Pam, I'm going to give you a first comment here.
All right. Well, first of all, I'm guessing you've aged yourself with that title. So, wow, I didn't realize. I don't know why, you just sounded younger. But, no, I apologize. Wow, this is hard-hitting. I can see why it works so well with the Panther because, you know, there's such a feeling of being trapped when you have to spend time in a hospital ward or, you know, a psych ward. You know, you feel like you don't have a freedom. And there's a raw honesty to this, powerful imagery and metaphors. I really appreciate, like, stamen yellow pills, white horse pills, and pretty pink wafers culminated in a retching of puke and bile, the ill-timed balls from a laughing clown, my survival, you revile. I am tripping balls with the troop of circus folk, setting up the big tent inside of my head. You just left me for dead. There's something about having those end lines, you know, that like have that precise rhyme to it that somehow works really well with the vibe of the rite. And, you know, I get just such a feeling of, you know, abandonment, a feeling of, like I said earlier, of being trapped, not only within the institution, but within your own body. So excellent rite, Neutron, and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I too love this piece. So no no question about it, a well-deserved front page pick. And it was so hard-hitting. Confessional poem, pregnant with good ambiguity, double entendres. The Laughing Clown was especially nightmarish simile. I also loved I Am Tripping Balls, with the troupe of circus folk setting up the big tent inside of my head. He just left me for dead. And just, wow. There's something about confessional poetry when the poet really puts themselves out there and allows us, the reader, into these intimate spaces taking. And I don't know, I just can't say enough about this poem. It's just a magnificent piece, Neutron. So thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Thanks, Richard.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got the next one, but I'm not sure if there's a SoundCloud. Okay. Liquid Mind Forever.
No SoundCloud.
Pam, if you can read it, that would be greatly appreciated.
I would be happy to. All right. Let me make the lettering a little bigger on my screen, and here we go. Have you noticed true vibrancy, intensity, when closest to deepest sorrow? In the noticing, did consciousness of breath cease as reverberating shells echo and symphonic wings cricket a new rhapsody? Did you feel complete? Think, was not your death? I laid in bed next to him, window cracked wind and whoosh of waves entering like an ectoplasm through half-closed blinds. Only the aftertaste of pristine, unspeakable silence pronouncing itself to unheard guests, able to call forth grief at its loudest, membrane sheath, reliquary for transient dyings. Once, only once, my ineffable death, I still try to describe this to the dying moth, drowning in pools of inescapable age cracks of concrete stomach, knots, distraction of contraction, signs of avoidance, clenched jaws, shut fists of relationships. And in this avoidance, I cast out, breathing as a choice, me, a fish, under bathwater, refusing to breathe in, learning to believe the truth. I have gills. Exhaustive, the eruptive sensate, too late to debate, to compensate, the repetitious resurrection of Sartre's no exit. His eyes, the arms of gods, prisms, archangels, conspire, despire, sets fire, ire, for flesh rocks back to abscess, crash, enmeshed of disappointment, terrorized. Want not, waste not, and in the wasting not we want for death. Pray at our deepest for the angel of death to end this mandala reign of glaring terror bared against the incoming and outcoming grasp of finality's next to last gasp before awareness of utter panic. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And not an easy piece to read. That it was lots of tongue twisting, beautiful poetry throughout that piece. A wonderful thing to have her joining us in this contest. Deborah just is such a talented poet, and I guess Rilke inspired her. I felt that she captured much of the spirituality and pained existential aesthetic beauty of Rilke's work. I especially liked, we want for death, pray at our deepest for the angel of death to end this mandala reign of glaring terror. I felt that there was much risk in this poem and much accomplished, and that it was truly a laudable tour de force of poetry. Wonderful piece. And Neutron, what'd you think of it?
Look, I agree wholeheartedly with what you've said there. I was particularly impressed with the wordplay and the internal rhyme, and as you said, that would have been quite a tongue twister indeed. So, Pam, you did a really good job on that one. I was drawn to a few words and phrases, the ectoplasm, the dying moth, and I have gills. Just some interesting imagery at play here, and it really does, you feel the pain that comes through this piece and the wanting to die, but not necessarily being sure of what comes next. So I thought it was a great offering for tonight.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this was definitely brilliantly written. I do like the spacing that she does. That kind of adds to the pause and within the write. And, you know, I like how it personifies death as a lover, as someone or something that seduces the mind into taking a look at what is at the gifts offered. I really liked "Want not, waste not, and in the wasting not we want for death, pray at our deepest for the angel of death to end this mandala rain." Wonderful lines there, and beautifully written, very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. Okay, Neutron.
All right, Richard, I'm going to get you to read your poem next. So if you'd like to introduce it.
Okay, sure. So the funny thing is that Buddha in Glory is actually one of my favorite poems, you know, beyond even Rainer Maria Rilke. Buddha in Glory is just like, I mean, that's a whole kind of ilk of the type of writing that I do. It's a whole subset is spiritual poetry, and I'll write about mantras. And so that seemed like a natural, but actually when I sat down to write where I'm at now kind of in life, I felt like there was this juxtaposition to the panther, that Rilke's panther is a metaphor for a being who is trapped and limited. And I feel like what I've been going through personally is allowing my untrapped or free being to really come to the fore, like, you know, what I'm going through professionally, and just not allowing myself to be pigeonholed or to be limited by the constraints of, quote unquote, paying the bills. And so I thought if I could figure out an animal that is 180 degrees from a caged panther, it would be my spirit totem, the wolverine. And so that's what this piece is. It's called The Wolverine. From birth, he vows never to be barred, even at risk of furred warmth of polite society. Sequestered in remote reaches of wintry forests, he cannot hear snide jibes of skunk bear, glutton, scavenger. The lonely hunter ascends steep cliffs and snow-covered peaks with ease. Trembling aspen quake in his wake as he turns ever ready to murder what can't be thieved. Be it howl of wolf, roar of mountain lion, or paw swipe of grizzly, his ear-splitting snarl, those muscly limbs, that broad and rounded head with piercing eyes and short round ears, sets all to their heels, for his indomitable spirit will never be cowed. End of poem.
Excellent read there, Richard. I love the spiritual feel to this fight and the indomitable spirit of the Wolverine. I think we can all learn from this fight as far as personal development is concerned, and that in spite of Rilke's bars, however oppressive, we remain true to ourselves, carving a place for ourselves free of societal constraints. But as you mentioned in your introduction there, unfortunately, we still have to pay the bills. My favorite part was his ear-splitting snarl, those muscly limbs, that broad and rounded head with piercing eyes and short, rounded ears, sets all to their heels, for his indomitable spirit will never be cowed. Great, right? And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really liked this. I thought it was a great choice for, to bring onto this show with Rilke's The Panther. And I like what you had to say in the front about before reading the poem about, you know, how you find yourself in certain places and that, you know, it depends on how the poetry relates to you. This is so true. I mean, it works so well as an extended metaphor because there are certain types of animals, such as the Wolverine, that are so good at standing up for themselves. They don't have any fear. Badgers are like that too. I remember one time being in the family car and we were driving home at nighttime and there was a badger in the road right in front of us. And they're not huge animals, but that badger did not run from our 1980-something big Plymouth. It stood its ground and it charged at the car.
Yep.
And I was so glad in that moment that I remember I was like 11 years old thinking I was so freaking glad we were in a car because, wow. But this is great. I love the ending with the mention of the indomitable spirit. And I also really like the lonely hunter ascends steep cliffs and snow-covered peaks with ease. I thought lonely was a great choice of word because it reminds us that every type of personality has its downfall. Like, yeah, you may be a brave person to always stand up for yourself, but in the process, what are you losing in return? You know, at least, you know, that's somewhat of what I get from it, but I definitely think it's an amazing write and very well done.
Thanks so much, Pam. Okay, Neutron, with that, we're bringing it back to you.
All right, so we have a poem by Way Down Upon Joy, and I might actually give this one a read. It's called Of Mysterious Mention, Secret Heart. I know I've grown from folks I've known that share a willing soul, and I'll contend I call them friend because they share heart whole. They have a way with what they say that serves like go-between, and makes me feel innately real as if I see unseen. To understand this promised land where peace is loving bliss, the ones I know oft choose to show with sense like silent kiss. There is no doubt that brings about the thoughts that too oft see, and when they muse those secret clues, it heightens mystery. I seem to hear what's hidden there as magic alchemy, revealing sights, ancient lights like starry galaxy. These secret things can give minds wings and what a way to soar. I seek to share just what they bear or on my own explore. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. Yeah, nobody does rhymes like Joy. She just is such a wonderful rhyming poet. I thought this was a great riffing off of the prompt with compelling rhyming verse that leads the poem to its powerful concluding stanza. I seem to hear what's hidden there. It's magic alchemy, revealing sights of ancient lights like star galaxy. These secret things can give minds wings, and what a way to soar. I seek to share
just what they bear, or on my own explore. So beautiful. Okay, and Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought Neutron did a wonderful read of that, and I have to agree. Joy is definitely one of the best rhyming poets on all poetry. You know, I have to say I must read more Rilke. I know the Panther because I think that's one of those poems that everybody knows. But after looking at the poetry so far, and I'm definitely going to have to check him out more. I like that the main message of this is about, you know, embracing the type of people, of having the type of friends that help you see the magic beyond the ordinary. I also felt like there was a kind of a spirituality, a sense of faith within this. There are some people that, you know, they're so good, they're so beautiful, and, you know, their hearts are just so beautiful that you can't help but think that perhaps they're a testimony that there is a loving higher power out there of some sort. You know, so I just really like this all the way through. But I especially liked that second stanza. It was very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. And by the way, I have to say that once again, our poetry contests have led to many front page picks, and this was another front page pick. So great job, Joy. And Neutron, I'm going to give you final word.
I just have to say, like, it lilted off the tongue when I read it, and just that lyricism almost, and I agree with both of you, it's so gentle, the rhyme, and it rolls off the tongue, and there was this sense of joy in the unknown, the unsaid between close friends, and as you would say, Richard, I think the joyous riff with the prompt in a heartfelt manner. And I'm feeling the love indeed in this rite. My favorite part was also the second stanza, and I thought it was just a lovely share for the show and well worth the front page pick.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, where would you like to go now?
Okay, so we have a poem by Colap next. And Pam, if you could read that, it would be great.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Here Comes That Time Again by Colap, and it goes like this. You let the earth dance around you, bow and curtsy, and the sun does what sun do. But our hearts somehow swells when it's that time. You are complete, pure Nima, at your fullest perfection, alabaster God breathing down your cool breath upon us, some fast, pray, await for you, just to admire you in your ivory plenitude. And I, with pulse running, singing my sweet Lord to you, and if I could, I'd string one jasmine after another for you, 31 total for this mouth. This would be a token of my love, Luna Goddess, avatar of a supreme power. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Neutron, if we could start comments with you, what'd you think?
Sure. I think Colap has encompassed the spirituality of the prompt, which was Buddha in Glory, with poise, grace, and beauty. So I did a bit of Googling to understand what Purnima was, and it's actually the word for full moon in Sanskrit. And the day of Purnima is the day Tithi in each month when the full moon occurs and marks the division in each month between the two lunar fortnights. And I think that Colap has incorporated traditions of her own into a well-crafted verse, and her adoration shines through, particularly in this part here. Purnima, at your fullest perfection, alabaster God breathing down your cool breath upon us, some fast, pray, await for you just to admire you in your ivory plenitude. I thought it was breathtaking.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, you know, this is Buddha in Glory. So it, what we in the West might not realize is that in much of the Buddhist world, they still adhere to a lunar calendar. And so there's that just attunement with the cycles of life in the lunar calendar that we kind of lose a little bit with our calendar, that the magic of the phases of the moon and how that relates to spirit in the phases of spirit where, you know, the full moon, the light of spirituality is in full bloom. And then, you know, when you have the new moon, it's that kind of dark night of the soul. And I think you really get that with the lunar calendar. And it is a beautiful metaphor for the Buddha in its glory, in that supreme being that we are and that we connect to in this very intimate way. So it's truly a very powerful spiritual poem. And it asks us to embody the divinity, which is always awaiting for us. I thought it was a very strong response to Rilke's classic poem. And Pam will give you final word on this piece.
This is a beautiful spiritual poem. It has wonderful imagery all the way through. I love the sense of reverence in this, the sense of, you know, that, as you mentioned, that connection, that love felt for the Luna goddess. And I like how it does celebrate the moon and celebrate the power, and especially the feminine power and beauty of it. So wonderfully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, Neutron, where would you like to go?
Okay, so I'm going to get you to read Anton Ansford 37's poem, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Should mention a name first.
That's okay. I kind of figured I was up. This is Anton Ansford 37, and it is called Panther Rewinds. And it goes like this. Rilke's panther paces his cage, sees nothing but bars with no world beyond. However, this vision is false. For every bar that exists, a space lies between it and the next. The panther's perception is false. For every 1,000 bars, at least 500 spaces exist. Probably the panther really sees that way, but we humans can see simultaneously, like a trick art picture. The freedom in the cage. End of poem. All right. So, Pam, if we can start comments with you.
Well, that was a great read. You know, this is so clever and intelligent in its look at how we perceive things. The idea that, you know, I like where he brings in the panther's perception is false. For every 1,000 bars, at least 500 spaces exist. And then, like a trick art picture, the freedom in the cage. You know, it just makes me think of the whole idea of how oftentimes we think we're free when we're not, or we think we're imprisoned when they're not. And sometimes we really can't tell the difference. You know, so just a powerful write and very well done.
Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Pam's interpretation of that poem was fantastic. For me, I don't necessarily agree with the sentiment of the poem in that I feel that the feeling of being trapped is not an illusion if it's felt by an individual, the persecution. Rather, it is indeed their reality.
I don't know, like if you take an incarcerated individual, for example, they would definitely argue that unless they have been institutionalized, that the freedom is not in a cage. But I thought it was a really interesting take on the prompt, and it was very thought-provoking. It took a while for me to actually formulate a response to this poem on that basis. But I think what Pam said is correct. You know, like sometimes you have this illusion of freedom, and sometimes you have this illusion of being trapped, and ultimately it's all in your mindset, which I think for me was in part the thematic content of the poem. So it was really, really an interesting take. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that these are some really great comments, because I feel like it's a poem that invites philosophical debate. So I think that our comments are exactly what Anton Ansford 37 was trying to do when he wrote the thing, which is to get us to think in a nonlinear way about freedom and imprisonment. I thought it was a great philosophical riffing off of the Rilke Panther prompt, taking Rilke's Newtonian poem and bringing it into the quantum realm, you know, Einstein's physics realm. So I thought it was just an amazing job and very well done. So, and it made us think, definitely. And with that, I guess we're ready for our next one.
Okay, so the next poem is by Gary Rubin. I've lost track of who's up for reading, so I'll give this one a read. I think it's my turn, and I'll get Pam up next. So this one's by Gary Rubin, and it's called God Arm Wrestles with the Sciences. And it goes like this. Got a wife and kids in Baltimore. Jack, the psychiatrist, informed my birth father visits were too emotionally distressful, tightly shoehorned into ill-fitted shoes a few hours with three young boys was painful. He was told to stay away, but not forever. That's on him. Be fruitful and multiply. The Bible is a builder's blueprint, foundations for the houses of God, built upon civility and kindness to each other, as science and mathematics arm wrestle with unsustainable growth. Did God timelessly instruct us to multiply forever? Sunday, bloody Sunday. Billionaires buy up water rights, launch joyride rocket ships, send their illegitimate children to outer space, ticking time bomb. Selfishness fuse fizzles. More and more forests burn, limited natural resources plundered, a shooting star begins to flame out. Are all men created equal? Some have a lemming spirit animal. They follow others that plunge off the cliff. The rest of us to sort things out. End poem.
Excellent read, Neutron. Yeah, wow. What a poem. So, and that open from, I think, Bruce Springsteen, right? I got a wife and kid in Baltimore, Jack. When I read it, it just automatically, I started hearing the song. So it's amazing how the mind works. I thought this was an impressive response to the prompt. I like how the Judeo-Christian ethos of unlimited abundance, the call to be fruitful and multiply from Genesis, could be viewed as the philosophical justification for materialistic exploitation of the planet. And yet, it's only in this modern era of scientific advancements that which when you combine with the old religious ethos produces our current toxic cocktail of climate change. I thought it was a really well thought out and reasoned piece, very nicely crafted. And Pam, your thoughts?
You know, I really, this one is wonderful all the way through. I like how it is both emotive and, you know, a philosophical. I like that it takes a look at how, you know, we need to learn to think for ourselves. I like that you noticed that was I didn't actually know what the first lines were. Front line was from a Bruce Springsteen song. I had noticed that the Sunday Bloody Sunday being U2, right? Is that who it is? Who sings Sunday Bloody Sunday?
U2. Isn't it some British band? Yeah. Oh, U2.
So.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. That's
No, I think it is U2. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that was actually about some real event in history. And so I thought that was a good in-between line to kind of listen to the next one. Billionaires buy up water rights, launch joyride rocket ships, send their illegitimate children to outer space. You know, there's so much money-making schemes out there, ways of showing off. It seems people want to show off their you know, riches in the most almost ridiculous ways. And that ending, you know, was so spot on. You know, we always think of a spirit animal as being something that, you know, guides us in the right direction. But the metaphor of a spirit animal that will drive you over the cliff is a great metaphor for, as I mentioned earlier, the whole idea that too often we will follow others over the cliff rather than stand proud on our own in our own thoughts. So I thought this was very well done for sure.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. And Neutron, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the social and spiritual commentary and also the seeming punchlines contained within each vignette. And I don't know. I personally do not think everyone is created equal, man or woman, or at the very least, they're not afforded the same opportunities in life, but we have to do with what resources we have. That lemming ending there, the lemming spirit animal, I think just points to that. The fact the dream of the white picket fence is dead on arrival these days, or at least in Australia. And just I was reading this article the other day that was saying that that basically the nickel that they need to create the Tesla batteries is in short supply, and it just makes you wonder where they're going to go to next. And I know it's a bit of a segue, but it just came off the back of billionaires buy up water rights, launch joyride rocket ships, send their illegitimate children to outer space, ticking time bombs, selfishness fused sizzles. And I think that was in somewhat a reference to Elon Musk. So just a really interesting, thought-provoking ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too, Elon Musk. Yeah. Yeah, almost painful to read, and quite good that it makes us feel those feelings and think about the sad state of what we're doing to the planet. Okay, so next up,
We have a SoundCloud. Actually, I've just realized, by Weaver of Dreams.
Yep.
So if you want to line that up.
I see that. Got it. Okay, let me pull it up.
My daughter's a magical, marvelous creature with a heart big enough to heal the world's wars. At 10, she sees the good in everyone she meets. I'm terrified, but she's tougher than you'd suppose. On her 10th birthday, we had a huge party for her. Sam opened her presents with great delight and glee. When she came to the last one, she looked surprised. Unwrapped, it revealed a wooden carving of a tiny tree. On the branches sat 10 little doves, one for each year, with a note from someone who was almost unknown. for a sweet little lady, my friend Sam, from Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones lived two doors down, a recluse. He lived alone. I was horrified, and what might have happened terrified me. Sam, what have we told you about speaking to strangers? My little girl looked sad for a moment, as if life was unfair. She said, Mum, he's nice, and he's one of our neighbours. I was so sorry I had made her feel unhappy on her birthday. I also felt ashamed and wondered what amends I could make. Looking into the innocent, trusting eyes of my little daughter, I said, we should take Mr. Jones a great big slice of cake.
Thank you for the sound cloud there, Weaver of Dreams. Okay, so let's start comments off with Pam, if we can.
Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful story style poem. I really like how the main message is the trust of and love and the innocence of a child who's willing to embrace and accept anyone, you know, and doesn't see them the way other people see them. However, you know, I also see with the eyes of a parent myself, and I can understand in today's society, or, you know, how a parent would be cautious about, you know, their child speaking to someone they had never spoken to before. But I think the main message is this is definitely that we need to love and embrace people the way that children so often do. So very well done.
Absolutely. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I thought this was a lovely poem. And for me, it reminds us of the innocence that we innately wish to protect and nourish as children grow. And, like, I personally am guilty of this with my niece and nephew, trying to hold on too tight for fear their world will implode. But they contain far more resilience than I will personally ever know or be capable of giving them credit for. And I thank Weaver for reminding me of that. It also reminds me of a program that has been set up, at least in Australia and I think elsewhere in the world, to impart intergenerational wisdom and address the loneliness of old age with preschoolers entertaining those in nursing homes. And it was found to be quite mutually beneficial. So very nicely planned.
Absolutely. Yeah, I too really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was a wonderful storytelling, right? Showing how innocence is often the portals of true brotherhood. And I know exactly what you're saying, Pam. And as I was reading it, I was kind of going back and forth that, you know, it only takes a second to ruin someone's childhood, and you never know what you're dealing with. But I liked the poem in that it took us to the other end of the spectrum and reminded us that sometimes it is okay to trust, and sometimes there's great wisdom in innocence. So a nice ad for our evening of Rilke. And with that, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, so Pam, if you can give June Johnson's poem a read, that would be great.
I would be happy to. All right. And this is, should I stop reading Camus and going down to the river to see my reflection, by June Johnson. I know I will be poet laureate and I keep writing, even if I am like Sisyphus. But unlike him, I am never happy, or maybe sometimes I am. It's just hard to tell. At least I am not cliched, drinking espressos and smoking clove cigarettes with a smug look on my face. I am so damn original. Darling, only you can make me real like the Velveteen Rabbit. You hold my hand, smiling at me, feeding my soul with your kindness. But why do sweet words feel like unicorns? I tripped over them when as a child. But still, I can be cruel, as I want you to be the poet, so I can get some sleep. I am tired of seesaws and my eyes are blurry. but how can I do this to you? I apologize every day, and you pretend not to know what I am talking about as you make me a cup of tea. I can see myself in the cup and in your eyes. You have never heard of narcissists. I have no choice but to be a poet. Free will is an inside joke. Philosophers have a mean stake, too. So I write about suffering like when Muirsault shoots an Arab. I wonder if Camus hated the sun I do. Why would I write about those who hug each other and cry? I've been forced to see that ugly scene before in hospitals with no shoelaces and plastic mirrors. Hope is for the weak and stupid. The only good thing is that Plath was here. This would be a sign that if I should kill myself, wait, what am I thinking? Time, this is for psychics and astrologists. I demand certainty. But isn't death certain? I know what questions to ask. Darling, I told you that poets like me are like hurricanes, but somehow you always manage to stay in the eye of the storm, marveling at the sky. I want to protect you from all the gods and metaphors, as you are the only rainbow that never had any strings attached to it. End poem.
Wow, great read there, Pam. Holy hell, what a poem. Darling, I told you that poets like me are like hurricanes, but somehow you always manage to stay in the eye of the storm, marveling at the sky. I want to protect you from all the gods and metaphors, as you are the only rainbow that never has any strings attached to it. Just, there's really nobody that writes like her. She has this just incredible confessional tone that it's simultaneously just raw, and her spirit is laid bare before us. And interestingly, it's kind of all woven with this kind of self-aware and self-deprecating look at herself as a poet. It's quite unique, and it always gets to me. That final stanza gave me goosebumps, which is always a good sign. Her protagonist always sings truth to darkness and survives to sing again, despite certainty of mortality. It is truly a beautiful piece of poetry. And Neutron, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was drawn to the same stanza. I won't repeat it. But for me, the literary illusion was perfection in this poem. And for me, I related to the inner turmoil, the commentary relating to free will or lack thereof when it comes to poeting. Although my muse seems aloof at the moment, it has stopped me from the revolving door of hospitalizations, or worse, ending in a prison of rage, whether it be metaphoric or real. There is something to be said about the velveteen rabbit and the lack of narcissism that June refers to. And love without strings attached is rare in this world, whether it be romantic, familial, or otherwise. I thought it was a great write.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this has definitely brilliant imagery and metaphors. You know, it's an amazing write on the idea of feeling like you struggle with understanding kindness because it feels so unnatural to you, understanding love because it feels so unnatural, because it's not something like that is often experienced, obviously, in this person's life. I did like the Velveteen Rabbit part, and I also like the questions like, I wonder if Camus hated the sun. I do. And the ending with the, as you are the only rainbow that never had any strings attached to it. I think it touches too on the idea of how it feels to be a person that whose mind and heart is constantly at a turmoil So I thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. Okay, and with that, I guess we're ready for our next one.
Okay, so we've got a poem by Lowell, and there should be a SoundCloud.
Right. Okay, let me pull it.
Ladies Who Lunch and Me, a poem by Lowell. A table set for two, she poured a glass of wine. The restaurant was packed of ladies who would dine. All elegant, relaxed, as I came limping through, now wearing what appeared a broken heelless shoe. Was soaked through from the storm, my hair was sopping wet, and dye I had applied was running down my neck. That semi-permanent would give a girl a glow, as auburn cheeks would prove, just look who's glowing now. Exclaimed I'd lost my job, my rent was overdue, no money for a cab and now a broken shoe. She did not bat an eye, no sympathy at all, so I sat drying out while inside feeling small. Dishevelled, wringing wet, my brolly inside out, an entrance I had made, of that there was no doubt. I'd ranted on too long and may have caused a scene. Forgive me, I digress, I'm such a drama queen. Dismissive of my plight, she told me once or twice of everything she had, she may have told me thrice. Her flat in Saint-Tropez, her beachfront property, this lady had it all, as she reminded me. Her hands well manicured, conducted, as she bragged, a symphony of tosh, the woodwind hardly sagged. I'd hoped she'd change somewhat, less selfish than before, as trumpets blown this loud, become an awful bore. So tell me, she explained, just how young do I look? Cosmetic surgery is worth it in my book. My doctor can't believe how old I really am. How old you really are, have you told this dear man? That blank look said it all, as Botox ruled the way. No matter what she thought, her face could never say. Then I remembered why we hardly stayed in touch. My self-obsessed old friend would always prove too much. Abruptly she would leave, and I would sit and fret on how a girl so skinned was meant to get the check. End poem.
Thanks for the sound clip there, Lol. Just a wonderful storytelling poem, especially that punchline ending driven home by compelling rhymes. I appreciated the SoundCloud. She really brought it to life in her read. Just a great piece and a nice rounding out for our evening. Different and a little bit more earthy than some of the other offerings, which were, I think tonight is filled with very spiritual and airy poetry. So nice to have an earthy, humorous poem as a change of pace in there. And she did it so well. And that was inspired by the quote, "Let everything happen to you. Beauty and terror, just keep going. No feeling is final." And what did you think of it, Neutron?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the SoundCloud, and I think everyone has someone in their life that Lowell has depicted, the braggart whom life has blessed, or so it seems. But there is much more to life than material possessions or a pert face, as it may be. But this is what we are conditioned to applaud, not to mention it is boring, waiting to hear the latest rendition or three of the highlight reel. Barely leaving room for interjections or rebuttals, a sounding board rather than a conversation. The main protagonist, in my eyes, may think herself a mess, but when times get hard, she will have incredible resilience to power on through the trials and tribulations that life throws at her. And I thought it was a great offering for the Rilke prompt that you just mentioned, Richard. Well done.
Absolutely. And Pam, I'll give you final word on this piece. What do you think?
Yeah, this is a wonderful rhyme and flow. It's always a treat to hear Lal read. I like how in this rite she reminds us that sometimes we just need to walk away from people who aren't really there for us in our most difficult times, because as she says, they're too self-obsessed. And I thought she did a wonderful job of creating these two characters and their lives and their surroundings. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so with that, we are ready for our next one.
Okay, so we've got a brevity here by Ken Smith. And Richard, if you could read that.
Sure. So this is Ken Smith. It's called The Day Beyond. And it goes like this. The first day of the holidays, before the out-of-province move, out of state of mind, a ship is coming in. I do not know what it looks like, only that on the bow, my name is silver-scripted. My fate has shifted. Good fortune waits me now. End of poem. And that was inspired by prompt 3, which is, I am too much alone in this world, yet not alone. And Neutron, if we can start comments off with you.
Yeah, look, I was really glad to hear the positive vibes that were put out in this poem. And I'm a firm believer of you attract what you send out into the universe. And on the bow, my name is silver scripted was my favorite line. It just has on second read, it has a really classic feel to the way that the words were versed, particularly the first day of the holidays before the out-of-province move. So I thought it was compelling given how short it is. It's almost a super brevity. Very well done.
Absolutely. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a wonderful brevity. I really like how he takes the whole idea of the ship coming in. And to me, I look at this as the idea of how you have having the faith that somewhere in the future more positive times are coming. And I also think the beginning line is very important, the first day of the holidays, because here with reading that first line and looking at the rest of the poem, to me, you realize that there's this idea of someone who is extremely lonely, extremely unhappy during a holiday season and still has the faith to believe that perhaps someday there will be a better holiday season out there for them. So I thought this was very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. I, too, really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was a strongly crafted metaphor, a nice riffing off of the Rilke prompt. And it had that Rilke vibe without parroting. So just very skillfully done. And with that, we are ready for the next poem.
Okay, so we have a SoundCloud, I believe, for Eric Svensson, unless I've got that wrong. No, there should be a SoundCloud.
Sorry, I was on mute. I said, yep, there is, and here it comes.
Zen, penned in, not out. Seed inklings, sprinkle thought, nudges, fecund mind. Exploration of her sunrays, tentative light lances, explore. Familiar farmyard sounds, detangled sleep. Outside landscape is swaddling mist wrapped. pitter-patter wander dreams of balmy nights, morning's wintry landscape washed by wild wave rain sheets. Island green cloaks, anomaly arid Spartan landscape, wild flowers bud burst open after the great spirit waters the land. Yeah, in Africa, there's a natural immersion with the element. Vast tracts of land still cradled, contains undisturbed primordial vibrations. Great sky spirit chose to cradle ever-evolving mankind on a heart-shaped continent. Missionaries, mountebanks, visionaries, and vanguards, moth to fire furnace, candle flame drawn, praying mantis devoured, primordial, undisturbed earth energy suffers no fools. Stone Age tools, a gentle reminder of mankind's nursery. North, south, east, west, great sky spirit goes by many names. Multifaceted I am diamond shines across countries, courtships, and censorship. Carbon compounded with stardust almond kernels sprinkled ya eons ago. Great sky spirit's comet still streaks, tweaks our heartstrings, entrains red blood pulses through all veined tributaries. Ink scribbles thoughts, nudges nascent mind narker. Exploration of I am's first thoughts, love's light lances explored. Primordial sleep's darkened face woke with big bang jolts. Gratitude's misting swaddling cloth cuddles cohesion and firm.
Wow. Thank you for the SoundCloud, Eric. Okay, if we can start comments off with Pam, what'd you think of this?
Oh, this is, as always, just absolutely brilliant. A wonderful write that pays tribute to the diversity and spirituality of Africa. I really like how in-depth he gets with his choice of words. The stanza, great sky spirit chose to cradle ever-evolving mankind on a heart-shaped continent, is one of my absolute favorites. He takes the heart and the mind on a trip where we see the power within creation at its beginning. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was drawn to this section here. Moth to fire, furnace, candle flame drawn, praying mantis devoured, primordial, undisturbed earth energy suffers no fools. Stone Age tools, a gentle reminder on mankind's nursery. And I think the adoration for Africa shines through, as Pam mentioned there in this rite, with many trying to claim it as their own, but like the sleeping lion, when it awakes, it roars, as does this poem. Thematically, Eric has run with the prompt with his own spin. Very nicely written.
Absolutely. I think both of your comments are spot on. I, too, thought it was a wonderful riffing off of the poem prompt.
many special ones. I like that great spirit, great sky spirit chose to cradle ever-evolving mankind on a heart-shaped continent. Amazing that all these decades of studying Africa and seeing that shape on the world map, it never occurred to me that it was heart-shaped until Eric pointed it out. And, you know, that's what poets do. They take things that we see every day and put a bow around them, and suddenly we see them with new eyes. And, of course, north, south, east, west, great sky spirit goes by many names. Multifaceted I Am Diamond shines across countries, courtships, and censorship. Carbon compounded were dust, were stardust almond kernels sprinkled here eons ago. Great sky spirit, our heartstrings entrains red blood pulses through all veined tributaries. Wow. A truly spiritual gem. Very well done. And sincere thanks for sharing it with us on the air and for the SoundCloud, Eric. Okay, where would you like to go next, Neutron?
Okay, so I feel it's been a while since you've read Richard, so I'll get you to read Julie Buck's poem.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I swear my head's on backwards today.
You know, we don't call it late night poets for nothing. By this time in the evening, I'm usually a little bit punchy, so it's hard for me to keep track as well. Okay, so we've got Julie Buck. It's a poem called Cold Coffee. It was inspired by the Rilke prompt, which is perhaps everything is terrible. Perhaps everything terrible is in its deepest being something helpless that wants help from us. And it's a poem called Cold Coffee. It goes like this. With thoughts not quite as quiet as I'd like, a disheartening sip of my cold coffee, my perpetually cold coffee. I think about change and how hard that is. I think about when things were not hard, like monkey bars and roller skating. My only enemy was dusk, time to go inside. As a breed, I don't believe we're meant to be. Somewhere, nature messed up, and now we do. End of poem. Neutron, if we can start comments off with you.
Sure. I thought there was a forlorn nature to Julie's nostalgic lines. I think about when things were not hard, like monkey bars and roller skating, when my only enemy was dusk, time to go inside. And the cold coffee as a metaphor for losing sleep and time were great. Never enough hours in the day to get what needs to be done. And the crux of it, always one more mouthful of cold coffee, trying to stay awake for the responsibilities that adorn the human race. Just really clever work.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was beautiful. It was thoughtful. I agree with Neutron that it has a wonderful nostalgic vibe and a certain sadness to it. The idea of a cold, feeling like a cold cup of coffee set aside and ignored is really just a great metaphor for the loneliness and the, you know, the questions, that the unanswered questions that are within the poem. So very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think both of you kind of nailed this piece. I felt it was a strong riffing off of the Rilke prompt. It was full of pathos and existential angst and just accomplished much in a brevity. So great job there. And with that, let's move on to our next one.
Certainly. So this one's by Rose Winter 515. I'm going to give this one a read. It's got a distinctly Australian vibe to it. It's an Ekphraxis poem based on Gum Ghost art by Albert Namatjira and on the Uluru UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it goes like this. Uluru, as rock, observes eucalyptus trees, whitened gum bark and leaves, ghosts of dreamtime immemorial, heat of Australian sunshine bleaches tree bark, like spirits of the ancestors, blue sky thinking, mountain island spiritual home, to the Janjatrara Aboriginal people, ancient paintings and rock caves, springs and waterfalls, all this is their inheritance and they have conserved it for millennia. End poem. And it was based on the prompt, I want to be with those who know secret things or else alone.
Excellent read there, Neutron. I was hoping you would read that one because it definitely is Australian and Aboriginal. And although it's kind of atypical for us to have the reader give first comment because of the subject matter, I kind of was hoping you would give first comment for us.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think that it's a very hard thing to comment on. I think that the First Nations people have tried to conserve their heritage sites in a modern world. But there have been instances where sacred sites in our history as Australians, or particularly First Nation Australians, have been literally blown up in the quest for highways and natural resources. Not to mention that until the last few years, people disregarded the spirituality of Uluru and still continue to climb it. And I'm really glad that Rose Winter submitted this for the contest. I thought it was a great answer to the prompt.
Absolutely. And I am really glad I had you go first because I think it sets a tone for comments to follow. Go ahead, Pam. What do you think?
This is amazing. I like how she pays tribute to an ancient land, an ancient art form. I like that it delves into the spirituality that happens when connect with the earth and remember their history and remember that they have inherited the earth to take care of. So powerful writing, very well done.
Absolutely, another great comment. Yeah, I too thought this was a wonderful word painting, which harkens to the Rilke prompt, I want to be with those who know secret things or else alone. But also it reminded me of Buddha in Glory. So it's just a beautiful poem and a great honoring of the Aboriginal people. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron. I know we're getting close to the end of the list there.
We are. Look, I think we've got time for one more. I'll give this one a read. It's by Mark Loopy, and it's called Ferris Wheel. I live inside a Ferris wheel. My life's like your life, real and unreal. Every day I sneak into a car. No ticket paid, so I'm not really there. The carnies never see me. Just the lion knows where I am hiding, and it's dying. Mangy in its cage, it cannot eat. Sick in dirt straw, it vomits up its meat. I pretend that I don't really care. I pretend I'm tumbling in the air. When others try to board, I just explain, the car is full, and then go round again. I pretend I'm somewhere near the sky. I pretend I do not have to try. I live out my longings and my dreams while clowns and elephants perform in teams. I live off all the trampled circus food, hot dogs, popcorn, flattened in the mud. When the lion dies, I'll disappear. Not a problem. I will never care. As long as I'm not really there, as long as I can tumble in the air. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. I thought this was a powerful, introspective poem on how we cope with life's slings and arrows through denial and minimization of its varied seasons. How many of us relegate ourselves to an existence in which we pretend I'm somewhere near the sky. I pretend I do not have to try. And as long as I'm not really there, as long as I can tumble in the air, just a beautiful piece and very sad. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely an emotive write. I like the look at the idea of living in the Ferris wheel, of feeling like, you know, life is the same thing over and over again, that you're constantly moving and yet never really getting anywhere. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I think it kind of speaks to living life a little too small, you know, not taking chances. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one personally resonated with me. I think at times since I've had my struggles with mental health, I get stuck in a cage, and I'm just starting to do exposure therapy. So this section here I was really drawn to. Mangy in its cage, it cannot eat. Sick and dirty straw, it vomits up its meat. I pretend that I don't really care. I pretend I'm tumbling in the air. When others try to board, I just explain the car is full and then go round again. I enjoyed the sentiment of this poem and the quest for solitude amongst the pandemonium of the circus. Like the lion, I sense the main protagonist is also trapped and surviving on scraps of humanity and food, a very thought-provoking piece, and it inspired me greatly.
Absolutely. Great comment. And what a great show. Every couple of weeks, we ask for the talent on All Poetry and specifically on Late Night Poets to come forward and answer to these classic literary prompts. And every 2 weeks, they deliver just a wonderful show. And I'm truly grateful, grateful to you, Neutron, as being my co-host on this journey that we endeavor on every couple of weeks. And also, you know, to fill my eyes for providing us this venue to explore and to inspire, hopefully, the great poetry that comes forward. And I wanted to thank you for joining us, Pam. Your voice is always spot on, and it always adds tremendous flavor and insight into our evenings. And I wanted to give you also a moment to introduce us to what's coming up at the 12:30 Eastern Time show.
All right. Well, it is obviously going to be a night of poetry inspired by poets, because we have Break On Through, where we have poetry inspired by some poems of Delmore Schwartz.
Mm. Yeah, Delmore Schwartz, so talented, just a great poet. And that era just filled with really talented poets like him.
Absolutely.
That should be a lot of fun. Okay, so we are getting close to the end here, but I want to say once again, we did it. Really cool, and great job there, Neutron. Thanks so much.
No worries. It's always a pleasure, and thank you, Richard, for spearheading the show and selecting such a great prompt tonight.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, it's awesome. Always a lot of fun, too. Okay, so with that, I'm going to bid everyone farewell and close out the show. Have a good night, Neutron.
Night. You too, Pam. And Richard.
Yep. Bye.